Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
We're all like guns, and I love being free. Because I'm armed, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 120. And for those of you that may have forgotten, my name is George. Imagine that. This week we are going to be talking about hard versus soft gun cases. But before we get to that, let's start off with what we did in guns. And in traditional fashion, I did nothing. Actually, I've had pinched my sciatic nerve, so I haven't been doing a whole lot of anything lately. I just finally got back to work, so shooting is not on the list for a little bit. Thomas, how about you?
I pulled a George again this week. I didn't go shooting either, but I'm also under doctor's orders. No shooting for at least another couple weeks.
You got a doctor's note.
I do.
Did you? See it? What did you do?
I wiped out on the ice walking the dog.
I
tore the muscles in my rotator cuff.
That's right. All right, Nancy. How about you, Mike?
Well, I did a bunch of stuff. I forgot to mention last week that I had taken my AR to the range as well after changing my handguard and the muzzle device to zero it again. Surprisingly, even though I took off my optic and everything, it actually was pretty close to zero. I don't even know if I adjusted it at all. It was pretty much within an inch, so I was happy with that. Mind you, the new muzzle, or combination I should say, flash hider, part of it is has a compensator blowing the air up, and when you're underneath a tin roof, it is very loud inside.
Oh yes, I'm sure it would.
Also tote.
Yeah. Like, there was another guy there with with an AR, and they're like, oh, yeah, we both got ARs. And then he took his shot, and it's like, pop, and I take mine, pow. So, oh, yeah. But, yeah, and then I also just put an order in for Wolf Springs. So Sarah and I both ordered springs for our 1911s, and then I ordered some replacement springs for my P226 because I realize I have no idea how many thousands of rounds I put through that gun without changing any of the springs. So I thought, for a couple of bucks, I'll throw some new springs in there. And then while I'm at it, why not order some springs for my P239, my GP100, and my AR-15. So I'll have lots of springs to change out soon once I get those.
Well, you might as well order them all at once. That way you don't get nailed with the shipping charges doing them separately.
Well, that and if you order something from Wolf, well, I obviously went way over, but if you order from Canada, or you have to do a minimum order of, I think, $25 US. So, I mean, lots of times when you order just like a couple of springs, it only comes to like $5. Like their prices are very reasonable. So you have to do a decent order. So good. So this week I went to a club meeting, and while there, I brought up the point. I said, I thought we should do a new shooter course. Not a new shooter course, but like something to get people into competitive handgun shooting. Because I've already met a few people on the handgun range, and a few of them say, oh, yeah, you know, I want to try IDPA is the big one at our club. And they say, oh, I want to try it, but, you know, I just don't have I don't have enough experience to do it, or this or that. So I kind of brought up, you know, we should do something so that members can come out for a night and kind of practice with their holster, and we'll try and, you know, get them comfortable so that they'll be confident enough to try out a match. Well, I didn't even know this, but apparently on Wednesday nights is actually practice night at our range. And apparently,
who
yeah,
knew?
That's just how busy it is. I didn't even know there was a practice night. So apparently I had completely died. Like, people were showing up week after week and no one else was showing up, so they would just stop showing up. And so I kind of accidentally volunteered myself to run practice night to try and rejuvenate it. So,
oh, that's cool.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So I'm just going to be in charge. Me and a couple of guys kind of decide, you know, we don't want to do it every Wednesday night because that will be a little too much for us. So we decided to do like the first and third Wednesday of every month, and we can just do a few things. If nothing else, it'll be hopefully like more, almost more like a get together between a bunch of shooters, just go shooting together for a night. So that should be good.
And if nothing else, you'll basically have a private range time, right?
Yeah.
If no one else shows up.
Well, yeah. And that's what I'll have to bring that up at future meetings that, you know, maybe Wednesday night from, I don't know what, like 4 to 8 or something like that, one of the pistol bays are booked off just for us. So that guaranteed that if you want to come out and practice your IDPA, IPSC, or I-Corps shooting, you can come out and there'll be a range for you.
Yeah.
Yep. And then this week, Sarah and I both received our new Air 15 lowers.
Insert George joke here.
Yeah, pretty much.
Jason zings me on Facebook.
Sorry, what did you say, Thomas?
Are they aluminum lowers or polymer lowers?
Aluminum. And they have ambidextrous bolt releases on them.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, well, Sarah's right-handed but left-eye dominant, so she's trying to shoot her rifles left-handed so that she can use her proper eye. So that's why she wanted it to be completely ambidextrous, and while she was ordering hers, I thought, why not start another build? So I ordered one too.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That seems to be a pretty common thing, being right-handed but left-eye dominant. Wanda just started archery this week with me and my girls, and she found out that she was left-eye dominant.
Hmm. Yeah,
I am. Sarah is. There's Tom Sticks is.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't think it's not like it's a rare thing or by any means, but...
You would think it's rare because it's kind of backwards, right?
Yeah, I guess.
What area? She's left-handed, right-eye dominant, and she's far-sighted in one eye and near-sighted in the other eye. Poor girl.
Yeah. So we received those. I kind of said to Sarah, we should build your lower now, but then she also pointed out to me that she wanted to get her gun painted. So I kind of thought, well, maybe before we bother putting it all together, we'll send her lower off to get painted.
But Cerakoted?
Like Cerakoted. Yeah, not Home Depot spray can special. We'll get it done right, but she wants to get the lower, the upper, and the handguard all painted white. So we don't have the upper yet, so we'll just have to wait for that to come in, and then we'll send that off probably.
We were driving my daughter back to her mother's place, and Wanda and I were chatting, and she goes, my buddy Terry had actually messaged me on Facebook asking about shotguns, so I had her answer him because I was driving, because I like to keep myself legal for any law enforcement that are listening. And she goes, hey, by the way, we need to send my shotgun away to get it Cerakoted. And I'm like, oh, yeah, we should do that. I'm like, are you still going for pink? She goes, absolutely. I'm like, oh, yay. I was hoping she would say no. But...
hoping that she would have updated her choice in color.
Yeah. Well, she still doesn't have her PAL, right? So it's still at my place.
Yeah.
And I don't care. I'll shoot a pink gun. It's just, I love that gun anyways. But
come on, you're comfortable with your manhood. You got daughters.
Yeah, you already shoot a pink gun.
I was just going to say, I own a pink buck mark that my daughter that said she would come out all the time shooting with me if I got a pink gun, who has never, I think she might have came out once or twice. So I've got this pink gun I shoot all the time that she never shoots. But it's a great gun. I love it. It feels good. It's just pink, which is fine. I don't care.
Yeah.
Helps me tap into my metrosexual side.
Yep. Metrosexual?
Yeah. That's gay guy or straight guys wanting to pretend they're gay. I might want to cut that because that might be a little controversial. Actually, you know, looking at the demographics, I'd leave it in.
You know, I work in Toronto. I think they're all metrosexuals downtown Toronto.
Wouldn't that be considered cultural appropriation?
I don't know what that means, so I'm going to say no.
Yeah, take a couple of syllables out for him to understand that way.
It pretty much means that you're stealing someone else's culture. It can be taken to the extreme. And I think it was Ottawa University stopped doing yoga classes because they said it was cultural appropriation of, I don't know, some Asian culture.
Oh, yeah. Somebody found it offensive that the girls are wearing tights or something.
Yeah. So
let's be honest here. Gay guys have style. They got moves. They got that whole culture style thing going. Guys like me, we do not.
They should take that as a compliment that you want to be like them.
Well, I'm not going to be a metrosexual. I'm just saying, if I was them, I'd be a little pissed that the straight guys are trying to be them.
I have a hard enough time just being myself.
Wow. See, look, I'm back and we're already off the rails.
Yep.
I don't know if any of that's going to make it into the show, but moving on.
No, George, I was actually looking at new belts, and they had this page of belt buckles, and they had this really nice one. It was a great big squirrel belt buckle, and I was going to order it just for you.
Jeez. See, it's a coin toss as to whether or not I should be on the show.
Painkillers are apparently working.
No, I'm self-medicating tonight. I got whiskey going tonight. I'm off the painkillers for the night. So, anyways, back on track. Mike, you had something about sorting brass.
Yep, I sorted brass.
All right. Fantastic. Let's go into guns in the news. Was there anything else you wanted to add to your sorting brass?
Nope, that's all right.
Just sorted brass?
All right. I sorted more brass, yep.
All right. Guns in the news. Why do you guys let me on this show? Guns in the news. Story one. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Sale to the public of surplus Canadian Forces Browning pistols will be considered, says DND. And this is by David Pergleese from the Ottawa Citizen. Last week, I had an article about the Canadian military looking to replace its Second World War era handguns. Replacing the 1940s era Browning handguns has been on the Department of National Defense procurement list for years, but now the purchase of new guns appears to be moving ahead. Still, the Canadian Forces figures if the purchase is approved and there are no delays, it won't have the new pistols in hand and being used until the 2023-2026 period. So what happened to the existing Canadian Forces General Service pistol, the 9mm Browning High Power? The wear and tear on the Browning have whittled numbers down to 13,981. Of those, 1,243 in the process of disassembled for spare parts in order to keep the other guns going until a replacement can be found. It is unclear how many will be left by 2023-2026 period when the new guns arrive, but there will certainly be some. Readers have sent me emails wondering whether the Browning handguns might eventually be sold as surplus, so I asked the Department of National Defense that question. Here is what DND spokesman Evan Koronowski had to say. Yeah, sure. K.
Evan
K. had to say. In order for the disposal action to take place for the Browning high power pistols, they must first be declared surplus to the Department of National Defense requirements. This has not yet occurred. Therefore, the disposal plan for the Browning high power pistols has not yet been developed and approved. The disposal plan will take into account the fact that the Browning high power pistol is a restricted firearm and various options, including possible sale to the public, will be considered.
You know, that's a real change of heart because a couple of years ago, they said they weren't going to sell them to the public. Same thing with the Lee-Enfields. They said they weren't going to sell them to the public. Now they say they are going to sell them to the public. So yeah. I don't think they should be destroyed because they're historically significant. A lot of Canadian shooters would love to get their hands on Browning High Power that was used by the armed forces that has the Canadian Forces markings on it. I'd love to get, even though I don't like the High Power, something like that I'd love to have.
It's a collector's item.
Yeah.
Here's my thing on the story. It's like the ultimate non-story. they're going on and on. First of all, it's not going to be available for almost 10 years. And then they go on about the article about how there's over, what, almost 2,000 of them are going to be decommissioned to be used as parts, and the rest of them, they're not even sure how many are going to be left. And like, when I was reading this, I'm like, oh, this seems like a whole lot of smoke.
Yeah.
Because by the time they actually do get to the point where they're replaced, those high powers are going to probably be so worn out, they're not going to be of any good anyways.
Yeah.
Well, they've been talking about replacing them for 10 years, and it still hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Right. And now they're projecting it's going to be at least another 10 years.
Well, they're saying that now they're going ahead with the with replacing them. Before, it's always been kind of up in the air where they were or not. But I did read in the previous article, he had mentioned that that the replacement pistol requirements are supposed to come out in 2019, 2020. So we don't even know what they're being replaced with. That's still up in the air. So
I heard that the U.S. replacing the Berettas with SIGs.
Yeah, with the P320s. Hmm. Those, if they weren't popular enough already, they're about to get way more popular.
I love the idea. I know I just kind of poo-pooed all over the story, but it just, when I read the story, they're going on and on about these selling these guns to the public, and then they're going on and on about how there probably won't be any guns left to sell to the public. I'm like, then, what's the point of the story?
Yeah.
But hopefully there are some, because I love the idea of being able to own, the public being able to own Canadian military surplus. I think that's fantastic. So.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the left is going to have a meltdown if this happens. They're not going to want us to have it. But if you look at history, civilians have always been able to buy used anything, as long as it's not prohibited. Our armed forces ex firearms.
Yeah.
Well, we can buy military surplus, regardless of whether they're restricted or non-restricted, from other countries. So why couldn't we buy surplus that comes from our own country? But if you look at the end of the story, it's almost like he's already kind of putting a spin on it. When it says, the disposal plan will take into account the fact that the Browning high power pistols is a restricted firearm. So they're already kind of, laying the foundation of, well, we would love to sell this to the Canadian public, but we feel because it's restricted, it would be in the best interest of public safety if we didn't.
Well, to me, it sounds more like they are willing to sell it to the public because it is restricted as opposed to a prohibited. Because think of it this way, if all the Browning high power pistols were 4-inch barrels, it's not like the military is going to want to swap out all those 4-inch for 4.25-inch barrels just so that they can sell them off to the public. They'd rather just chop them up.
Oh, they just scrap them.
Yeah, but the fact that they're already legal to be restricted, they don't have to do anything. But their point also is that you're talking about how many they're going to have left. It's going to be this, like the same thing with the Lee Enfields. The question is going to be, how many are left? How many of those are going to go to like military? Like if you're in the military, they probably get first shot at buying these. How many of these are going to go to museums and other, historic places? And then the question is after that, how many are left? And are they going to be charging, are they going to be going for $3,000 because there's only 10 of them left for the public?
Yeah.
Right?
They're going to be very sought after.
Yes, and that's my point, right? If there's only 10 left going out to the public, they're going to go for so much. I'm not willing to pay that much for it. But if they were going for a reasonable price, they're going for a good price, I'd be willing to buy one just to keep for a collector's purpose.
Yeah.
As long as it's not more than a new-in-the-box high power, sure. But, if they're going to be charging double the money what a brand new high power is going to cost, I'd rather just go buy a Browning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go get that, print a sticker of a Canadian flag, stick it on the slide, and bam, it's official.
All right. So story two doesn't have anybody's name on it.
Thomas? Yeah, Thomas's name all over.
I'm going to do it. Story two is from Team CSSA. Halifax Regional Police issued this stern warning after arresting a man for possession of a paintball gun at St. Mary's University. As far as I know, it's not even considered a gun. The Halifax Regional Police would like to remind people not to post pictures of themselves with firearms or guns that appear to be actual firearms. Police have to treat these investigations as if they were firearms that could be potentially lead to dangerous situations. It also ties up police resources and can result in various charges for the person posting the pictures. Well, if the stupid security guard didn't report it, none of this would have happened. Anyway, social media lit up over the statement. Taking a photograph of you holding a firearm, real or not, is not a crime. Not even if Halifax Regional Police imply otherwise. St. Mary University security officers, it seems, spend their time trolling Facebook and Twitter instead of performing their actual security duties. Security notified police at 10:45 p.m. when they found a photo of a student holding a paintball marker on social media. Their concern? It was a gun. Oh, and in the background of the photo appeared to be a university dorm. The problem here is threefold. First, mass hysteria takes over every time a photograph of someone holding a gun hits social media. Someone calls the police. Well, obviously, they don't look at our Facebook pages. secondly, every complaint of a person holding a firearm in a photograph posted to a social media forces a police investigation. Not true. Only if somebody actually complains about it. Then they have no choice. Halifax Regional Police Sergeant explains otherwise. If you call any type of gun call in to the police, they have to investigate it. Whether it's real or not, that's their job. Regional Police, they said, you have to look at the world. It's a dangerous place. We couldn't tell looking at the picture if it was a real firearm or an artificial one or a toy. It looked real to me. We have to treat everything that is treated like a real gun. I don't know any paintball marker that looks like a real gun because it's got that great big holding tank on top. The CSSA takes no issue with the fact police must investigate. We too live in the real world. Our empathy stops when speaking with police authority, they demand citizens stop posting photographs of themselves holding firearms. The Halifax Regional Police implied that uploading a photograph of you holding a firearm to social media is a crime. We don't remember when the posting of a photograph of a gun became a criminal offense. That's the million-dollar question many good citizens ask the Halifax Police. The response by the Halifax Regional Police to that question posted 3 days ago or 3 days later as an update to the original press release clarified their position. They said, "Well, it is not an offense to post pictures of people with firearms or guns online. We ask that people do responsibility and consider unintended consequences so they don't alarm their fellow citizens and unnecessary tie up police resources." Third, the young man committed no crime. Regardless, the police took him to custody, questioned him, and eventually released him. They did not rule out criminal charges against him. This young man did nothing wrong. He took a photo of himself holding his paintball marker. He posted the photo on social media account. No crime was committed. But that didn't stop the Halifax Police from issuing the veiled threat to citizens. For clarification, our intent was to remind citizens that some pictures that include firearms can cause fear and disruption in our community. We have a responsibility to investigate complaints we receive, and when responding to a weapons complaint, we must operate under the assumption that the firearm is real until we can prove otherwise. This can involve significant use of police resources depending on the situation. Investigation may result in firearm charges under the Criminal Code or Firearms Act or public mischief charges. Then the Rebel Media reporter and CSSA stalwart Faith Goldie took issue with the threat by the Halifax Regional Police. She posted 4 photos of her holding guns to the Twitter feed. First one showed her holding a 50 cal. Last one showed her handguns spitting, you know, big balls of fire out of the muzzle. All of them show Ms. Goldie having a great time with guns. To the best of their knowledge, police have not yet to investigate Mrs. Goldie for any images. Funny, eh?
Well, it's probably because he was a college student, right? They figure they can run him through the mill and he's not going to know any better. He's not going to know his rights and he's not going to be able to defend himself.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Now, it depends. Like, if the university had some type of policy that it stated that you can't do this, you can't do that, and then the kid broke the policy, I can understand them
if he broke policy, then that means that the campus security should go there and deal with it.
Exactly. Right? But no, they're too busy trolling Facebook and said, "Oh, let's call the police on this one."
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh well. Like, I can understand them following stuff to see what's going on as part of the job, but you know, reporting something like that, they obviously don't have very much to do in their actual job as security. They're looking for pictures of kids with their paintball markers.
Paintball guns.
Uh-huh. No, they're actually called paintball markers. That's how they refer to them. They actually don't refer to them as guns.
Seriously?
The police do. Yeah, but you can go buy them. If you go to the store, they don't call them a paintball gun. They call them paintball markers.
Yeah.
Really? I didn't know that.
Because it's not a gun. It just marks your opponent. That's the point of it.
with a big bruise.
See, only if you're close up.
I don't even need to listen to the show to be learning things. There you go. Learn something new every day. So that's why I show up for the show, so I get to learn things.
Well, if you showed up more often, you might learn more.
Yeah, sure. Oh. Thomas, I liked it better when I was zinging you and you weren't zinging back.
Getting old fast, eh?
No, it's I don't feel like a bully anymore when he zings me back. All right. Anything else? Any more comments on that one before we move on to story three?
Nope.
All right. So my summation of it is they're a bunch of butt clowns, and they need to get lives and do their job. So story number three, buckle up because this is a long one. Project Maple Seed. Are currently looking for Maple Seed event locations. We are looking for possible Maple Seed locations for 2017. If you are a member of a club and are interested in potentially hosting a Project Maple Seed event for 8 to 16 participants, send us a note and we will get it started. And where would you send that note to? You can go to their website, www.mapleseedriflemen.com. And these are the fine and wonderful folks, Kelly Lynn, Kevin Latham, and I'm assuming Rick, because Rick just went on the trip down to Texas with those two to do a boot camp, so I'm assuming Rick's involved in that as well. So you got three fine, fine people that are going to be taking the Maple Seed by the horns and getting things going. So if you haven't heard of Maple Seed or Apple Seed, you know, stop the podcast, come out of your cave, and enjoy the sunshine and get a life.
That's not fair. Not everybody. Some people may have just come listening to the show. Basically, Appleseed itself is a combination of American pre-Civil War history and marksmanship. So what they've done, they wanted to include the marksmanship portion and change it to Canadian history. So that's basically what it is. You're going to have some Canadian history. We don't know what it is because we haven't actually spoken to them about the content of the course. But Appleseed was $60 US when we took it, plus whatever the range fee. So I don't imagine the fee is going to be much more than that. We honestly don't know. So even if it's $60 and you have to pay an extra 10, 20 bucks for range fee, it is the cheapest course you're ever going to take, and you're going to learn skills that will last you the rest of your life. If you can pass it and actually get your patch, right, George?
Yeah. Hey, you know what? I do the level that I'm at just so that other people can feel good about themselves when they go, hey, I did better than George.
So well, you went up. You actually made it to sharpshooter before you left, right?
Yeah. I think my highest score was 168 or something like that. So
is that why you always come last in cowboy shooting too?
Yeah. I just show up for the fun. I show up for the camaraderie. Like that Maple Seed was probably, well, we got to meet you and Sarah. And we met Mario, Rick. Who else did we meet? Grant from up north. You know, we met so many people, and it was fun. You know, we all went out to dinner. We had a great time, and that's what I go for. I'm a terrible shot. I don't put in the time I need to put in to get better. I get it. I know my limitations. I like going and you know, making holes in paper and making big bangs, so... You know, I'm okay with where I am skill level wise. For me, a lot of it is just the social aspect, meeting new people and stuff. And that's, you know, it'll probably take me 12 apple seeds or maple seeds before I ever get rifleman. And even then I may not get rifleman, but as long as I enjoy it, have a good time doing it, that's all I care.
As long as
I got lots of T1s and Advil.
Most people don't get their patch the first time. So sometimes it takes people two and three tries to do it.
Yeah.
Well, my only advice, if you go to an Appleseed or a Maple Seed and they give you your target to put up downrange, I would put something on that target so you can physically see that it is your target. Like put a big red X on it or a sticker.
Don't shoot next to George.
Especially if you're right handed. Don't shoot left to George because you'd be playing footsies with him the whole time.
Well, not only that, but George has been known to shoot the wrong target.
I think you're not supposed to be within like three either way of George.
Well, it's not just George. I'll tell you, I didn't go to the maple seed because I actually worked that weekend. So I just went up for the second day, just go up to see everybody. And the one thing that upset me the most, and I was almost in tears. Kelly on her very last drink, she had it. She had her patch and somebody put like 10 shots on her target. And she is one strong lady. And when she was walking back, just the look on her face almost put me into tears. She didn't cry. Like, you know, she's a tough cookie. But she worked her butt off and she would have got it, except they took off the points off her target because of the extra shots. And I felt so bad for her. So I know the next time she goes, I know she's going to get it. She hasn't gotten it yet because she goes out.
I think she did because she's got her orange hat. She got her orange hat down in Texas.
Excellent. Yeah. She did get it.
She must have got her patch.
Yeah, I think she went down to Michigan. I think she went down to Michigan. Again? Yeah. Well, they went down in the last spring, didn't they? I think
they did the second time because I didn't go down the second time.
Yeah, they went down again, and I think she got her rifleman then.
Well, I knew she'd have no problem getting it. She really worked at it. She really, really did. She deserves it.
I think that the first day, I think I had shot her target a couple times, and then I just put G's. Like, if you're new and you don't know what the targets look like, you got 1, 2, 3, you got four rows of target engagements. So I would put G's all the way down, like 4 G's down the side of on both sides of my target, or my target board, the backer, so that I knew every time, like I knew I was always on my target because I saw the G's. And then the one that you were talking about, Thomas, when somebody was shooting hers, because she called it out and said, somebody's shooting my target. I'm like, no, I see my G's. I'm like, it's not me, not this time. So don't shoot next to me, long story short.
Or next to Tim. He likes to shoot the target wire and have them all fall down anyway, so.
That's right. He did that in Michigan. That was funny. What are the frickin' odds of that? So anyways, long and short of it is, Project Maple Seed is well underway. And, I was talking to, it's ironic that this came up because I was talking to Kevin last night. And he was telling me they are hoping to get some dates in 2017, and it's still a work in progress, and they're chugging along and whatnot. So very excited for them. They're good people, great people, and
it's for everybody. Even if you're an experienced shooter, you'll walk away with a lot more knowledge than when you actually attended. And it doesn't matter your age. We were down there. We had 10, 11 year olds. We had people in the 50s and 60s. We had me. So,
even if you're in the geriatrics range, you can do it. Right, Thomas?
Maybe. All right. Hey, who walked out of Michigan with a rifleman patch?
Ken Kowalski, Rick,
Jazz. Brian kicked butt.
Yeah, Brian.
And some old guy from Toronto.
Know. That was never me. Never heard of him. Never heard of him.
I didn't get it to my second day. I think I actually managed it twice on the very end. I came close to not getting it.
The best piece of advice I could give anyone is if you're not used to shooting prone, make sure you take Tylenol 1s and Advil before you start your shooting, because you will need it.
Yeah, the first day George and I were both in agony, and then we self-medicated the second day, and we did okay. we're just lucky that customs never actually decided to check medication that was in our actual bottles, because they realized that we had, like, the Tylenol 1s that you get over the counter here, you can't bring those in the States. You can bring regular Tylenols, but nothing with codeine. And we got down there and realized, oh, man, we smuggled drugs over the border unintentionally.
Well, you know, it's funny, as they searched my car.
You're officially drug mules.
I got pulled into secondary, and they went through my car. So, I don't know. Don't bring codeine, or don't bring Tylenol ones across the border. All right. So, again, George has taken that completely off the rails. But what would you expect anything less from me? I would say you probably should, but you're not going to get anything better than
that. But you'll be disappointed.
You will be. All right. So what's new in the industry? Thomas.
Well, SHOT Show is wrapped up down in Nevada. And there's a couple things that I kind of liked. Kel-Tec has a new offering. It's the KSG-25. Ready for this? It's a 30-inch barrel that can be chambered up to 3-inch shells. The magazine capacity with 3-inch is 20+1. The capacity with 2¾ is 24. And with the Aguila mini shells, it can hold 40+1. And it's also a lot heavier than a regular KSG. It weighs 9.25 pounds empty. So imagine if you put 25 rounds in it, add a few more pounds. But I think that the three gunners might like this because they'll never have to reload. They're going to have to unload. They're going to spend the whole time unloading after they finish shooting because they're still going to have half things full of rounds.
Is this pump action then?
Yeah, KSG, yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing though. The KSG, that was the pump action shotgun with two tubes, right?
This thing might have more than two tubes. Or because it's got a 30-inch barrel, so imagine how long the tubes are going to be underneath it.
Well, I don't know what the official three-gun rules are, but I seem to remember, I think it was Trevor saying once that the KSG was no good for three-gun because you're only allowed to have one tube on your gun. Or maybe that was unless you're going into the open class. But it was something like you're only allowed to have one tube on your gun. So the KSG was, by default, not allowed.
You're probably right, unless it's allowed in open. And then the price, too. It's $1,400 for a plastic pump shotgun. So it's pricey.
But I mean, if you can fit 24 or 41 shotgun shells, like you said, if you're going to, like a shotgun steel challenge match where all you're going to do is pump shells down range all day long, like you said, you load it on Monday and you shoot it all week.
Yeah, like the old Henry commercials.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the line of the week. You load it on Monday and shoot it all week.
The other one that I really like, remember how STI came out with the DVC line last year? Well, they now have a DVC carry model. It's going to be Pro-Hib up here because the barrel's only 3.9, but it's a 9-inch incorporating all the race gun features. It has slide cuts, got a 3.5-pound trigger, ambi safety, tritium front sights. It's got the fixed rear ledge sight that we were talking about with Matthew a couple weeks ago. So if you have to rack it, you can use the rear sight. And it has the recoil master system. So I imagine it's going to be pretty light shooting in a 9mm if it's got the recoil master system. And it, unfortunately, it's going to be Pro-Hib. But, if you get the concealed carry, that would be nice. I like that.
That's a tritium front sight.
What did I say?
I don't know, but it wasn't tritium.
I don't think I said front sight. I just talked about the rear sight. I didn't even mention the front sight. So it's got a tritium front sight also, Mike.
Well, for all the listeners, go back 30 seconds and see what he says. And
I don't think I said that. I just said the fixed ledge rear sight. I don't think I even mentioned the front sight.
Okay.
But tritium's nice for concealed carry because it's lights up in the dark.
Yeah.
I also contacted a couple people that were down there and asked them what their input was or what they liked. And Heinrich actually had, from Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns, he had a couple of things that he liked. There was one called the Hudson 9. I haven't actually looked at it. Or the Maximum 9. He says he wants one now. He said the Colt Cobra looks really good. Hornady has a new securing mount system for the AR-15, so you can actually mount your AR on the wall and it locks the action up. And for some reason, that was the one thing he was most excited about. He liked having the AR readily available, but it can be locked up. And then there was another thing we talked about briefly. I put the link on it. It's from the firearm blog. It's a microthermal sight. And basically, it's like how you can get your red dot. You can get a magnifier for your red dot. It's basically the same thing. It just fits on your scope, and it turns your scope into a infrared scope. And I believe the magnification on that is only one power. The cost was pretty expensive. It's like $2,400 for this thing. And they only actually have one made. They just had the prototype there. So he kind of liked that. So I wouldn't mind checking that out. And then I spoke to David Coping.
Hold on. Before you go on, Just a little explanation. The Hudson 9 that you didn't know anything about, that is the new striker-fired gun that is, I'll say, based off the 1911 with a straight back, straight sliding trigger. And it's supposed to be the next greatest thing since sliced bread. The Colt Cobra, for those who don't know, is Colt's reintroduction, I guess you could say, into the revolver market. It's a 6-shot 38 special. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2-inch barrel length, so it's pretty small. And have you looked at all into this Hardy Secure AR-15 thing?
Yeah, I went online and looked at the pictures of it. It looks pretty cool.
Did it look like it would be legal for Canadians to store their firearms in that? Because you need two locking systems, right?
It depends, because you have to... It has to be encased and trigger locked, unless it's actually in some type of
safe. Yeah. Well, what's is it in what you would consider a safe?
It depends. If you put a lock on the door for your bedroom, it would be considered safe storage, and I guess it would be fine.
Yeah. When you looked it up, is it this Rapid Safe AR gun locker? Is that what they called it?
No, they just had blue guns. It just mounts to the wall, and then you just stick your AR to it. So it secures your AR.
Oh, there it is. I just found it. Yeah, I would not call this Canadian legal. Unless you could also put a trigger lock on it, it wouldn't be double locked, and it's definitely not. I would consider anything where the gun's not even completely enclosed is not a safe.
No,
regardless of if they call it a safe or not. So, but yeah, that's my opinion.
Designed for the U.S. market. It's not designed for up here. But he really liked it. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm always interested in a better way to store a long gun in a quick access safe, essentially. But they don't really make that for Canada.
And who would make a 1911 striker fired? That's just wrong on so many levels.
This thing is apparent. Well, they based it off the 1911. Apparently, like, who was it? I just listened to a podcast. Daniel Shaw. He from Gunfighter Cast. He just had the creators on, and they started with the 1911 with that concept. They wanted that perfect 1911 trigger. And apparently they've done it. They've turned the 1911 into a striker fire. So now there's no, I assume there's no external safety, but apparently it has the crispness of a 1911 trigger.
As long as it has the same grip angle, it might be more comfortable to shoot. Yeah. You know, the one striker fire that did impress me, well, when it worked, was the Strike One. That had a really nice striker fire trigger on it. It doesn't feel anything like a traditional striker fire.
Yeah. Well, why don't you get yours fixed, then you can actually go shoot it.
Yeah, I guess I should send it in for service. It's only been five, six months?
Five. Yeah.
I just get mad every time I look at it. I throw it back in the safe. Then I spoke to David Coping from Ground Power. He didn't get to see much because he was chained to his own booth for 4 days. But they are introducing their Q100, which I believe is the new striker fired ground power, and they should be in the country by March. So I know a lot of people are interested to see how ground power handled the striker fired pistol or the trigger system.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also spoke to our friend Chris Babe. There was a few things he liked. He said the Mark 7 press was very interesting, but it was $8,400. It's kind of expensive.
And kind then
there's a trick. It might be an automatic machine. I didn't even look at it. It's probably some type of machine operated press. I don't know. And then apparently Stoker has come out with the 3-gun shotgun that he thought was really nice. And it was actually priced very low. So that'd be amazing to see. And there are pistol caliber carbines that take 2011 magazines. So the wide bodies, which would be neat, especially for pistol caliber matches for IPSC and USPA if it takes off. And then the AR from Black Rain Ordnance. He said he fell in love with that one, and including the 3-gun, there's a 3-gun ready one that he really, really wants to own. And also, because I think he has a 7.5 BRO model, so he'd like to, something a little bit longer for competition. But then he went to the gym. I didn't hear from him after that. So, but there was so many products coming out, and there was so many other podcasts that or mentioning stuff from SHOT Show. I just wanted to make it a short list. I didn't want to spend the whole episode talking about all the new products, because anybody can go online. All the manufacturers have new products coming out.
Excellent. All right, so that brings us to our main topic, gun cases. Who wants to start us off?
I think Mike should do this one since he started it.
All right, so the main topic is gun cases, and really they can be divided into two main categories, and it's the soft-sided ones versus the hard-sided ones. Soft-sided cases are usually made out of something flexible, durable, like nylon or leather, whereas hard cases are made of sticks or metals. The benefits of soft cases are they're lightweight, they're usually a lot cheaper, and they take up a lot less space. And they can also be folded up when they're not in use, which is kind of convenient if you have a house that's overflowing with other garbage, that they're not taking up much space.
But the disadvantages are is that they're none of them are water resistant. They're not good for long-term storage. If you're out in the field or that case gets wet, your gun's going to get wet. Yeah. And they don't offer a lot of protection. Like, you know, it'll protect your gear from being knocked around or scratched up in the car. It's not going to protect your gear from impacts or dropping, but they do qualify under safe storage, right?
Yeah. And as long as you have two little loops on your zipper, you can lock one up.
Yeah. As long as you put a lock through it, it's perfectly legal.
Yeah. Mind you, to me, I would never do that because all it takes is a knife and someone can literally just cut your gun out of the case, right?
Which I've had to do.
Yeah.
I had a soft case and I lost the key and I had to rip the case apart, but yeah. It happens.
Yeah. And on the extreme end of soft cases are what you'd call a gun sock. And Sarah actually got these and I found out that they're good for hunting. And literally it is a sock that you put over top of your gun. And it's like, it has no rigidity to it. So it will just fold up into a ball when you're done. So it makes it good for hunting because you need to keep your gun in case. Well, you throw it in one of these gun socks. You walk out to your tree stand and you can literally just ball it up and put it into your bag.
Right? I've got one for my shotgun.
Yeah.
Sarah got it. A lot of them are impregnated with silicone, so they do offer some type of water resistance as well.
Yeah. But, yep. So then they also make hard cases. And hard cases, the benefits of them, they're good for security. They lock up a lot better. Protection, both from being banged around and... because of the foam inside, normally like a pick and pluck or something like that, it will keep the gun relatively still. They're good because you need a hard case for airline transportation. They will not let you fly with a soft-sided case. You can get them to hold multiple firearms, and that can go both for multiple long guns. You can get them to hold multiple handguns. Like, you can get ones that... I think they refer to them as three-gun ready, and they're designed to hold an AR-15, a handgun, and a shotgun. So, nice that way. They're watertight.
Not watertight.
Some are watertight. I'll rephrase that. Some of them are watertight. They have
They're more watertight than a soft case?
Well, what if you bought, like, one of those professional-grade, like, Pelican cases?
That's a different story. That is designed specifically to be watertight. It's got a water gasket around the outside. They'll have a valve on it, so if it heats up and the pressure can vent. But those are specifically designed as being waterproof.
Yeah, but they're also hard cases.
The one you get for $10 or $15 at Walmart, you've got one great big huge hinge along the outside, then you've got all your little latches, and they do offer some water protection, but they're not watertight.
Yeah, well, their water protection is in if you leave it sitting on the bed of your truck and it's raining, it'll keep the water out. But as soon as you dunk it in water, it'll leak through.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't go diving with your Walmart hard case.
Exactly. Take your nice Pelican.
There you go.
And last thing, $300.
Yeah, and the last thing I have written down here is some of them do have wheels, and they're good. They're no good on gravel, but they are good on solid ground. So that can be nice if you do have one of those three-gun kits, because that's getting heavy.
They can be.
Yeah, these hard cases are heavy. Like, I bought a nice one when I bought my AR just to have something a little nicer instead of my Walmart brand one. And it is heavy without the gun in it. It's a lot thicker. And it had like the gasket seal and everything on it. So there's a lot more weight added onto it.
Yeah, I find the ones that have the water gaskets tend to be a thicker plastic as well. Because I've got a couple of cheap Walmart ones. And then I have this huge double case that I got at Canadian Tire 20 years ago. And it's got to weigh, the case itself's got to weigh 15, 20 pounds. Because it's such a thick, thick grade of plastic. And then it's got the O-ring around the outside. So I would consider that waterproof. But it doesn't have the valve like, say, a Pelican.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something like what I got. Yeah, and then also when you get the hard cases, there's two different foam styles you can get inside. You can get what I would refer to as the pick and pluck, which is the kind that it's kind of you can pull out the foam to fit your gun specifically. And then they have the rigid type, the generic one that just clamshells together to hold your firearm still. Pick and pluck is nice because you can customize it to fit your gun. So especially if you have something attached to it, like a scope, you can make sure that it's properly, it's going to be safe in there. It's not going to get banged around too much, especially if you're doing airport travel. But the big kind of pain in the butt with it is like I picked out for my one AR, but if I want to bring, I don't know, I don't have a Tavor, but if I had one, I wouldn't be able to just drop my Tavor in it because it doesn't have the same shape to it.
Yeah, I had the problem with my, I had a Smith & Wesson 629 that had the 8 and 5/6, the huge 8-inch barrel on it. So, of course, I cut it out to fit that gun. Well, it doesn't fit any other gun. It only fits the really big, big barrel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just had a piece of sponge that I just put in front.
Yeah.
The shorter barrel.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, with that rigid kind of foam that you just kind of clamshell together, it does do a decent job, but I have, if you drop the case and you have two guns in there, they will move. And I have had them. Now, no damage was done, but you could tell that they had moved because they were touching when I opened it up, when they weren't touching when I closed it up.
Yeah, but I've had one case like that, and I'll actually put a piece of sponge right between the two firearms so they don't jam together.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a good idea. But the nice thing with those is that you can put any gun. So, like, oh, my handgun cases are all that style because I have too many different types of handguns that I'd rather just do that and have the generic case and bring multiple cases to the range with me than, I don't know, I guess have one case per gun.
Yeah, that's what I do a lot. I take the bigger cases, I put the rifles and the handguns and everything in the one case and just lock everything up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So some other considerations when you're out picking your gun case, you might want to consider what type of firearm you're traveling with and how many. So if it's a restricted gun, then it needs to be double locked. So if you may choose to buy something better than the Walmart special one that, like you were talking about, it has those kind of really cheap clamp locks on it. And depending on where you put the locks on it, you can pry open one end and slide the gun out. So if you're traveling with your $3,000 elk gun or something like that on the hunt, you might want to buy something better than that cheap Walmart case.
If you can afford a $3,000 elk gun, you probably can afford a good case.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just like a lot of things, right? If you can afford that $3,000 gun, then spend a little money. Protect it. Protect your investment. But also how many. So obviously, if you're traveling with multiple pistols, something like that, then you want to make sure that you have a case big enough to carry all the pistols that you want.
The other thing you have to look at, too, you may buy a case, whether soft or hard case, that fits your shotgun. But if you have a long gun with the scope on it, there's a very good chance that it won't fit. So if you're picking out a soft case, you have to look for one that's actually designed to take a scope as compared to one that doesn't. And same with the hard cases from Walmart. I have some, well, my AR will not fit in my Walmart cheap case.
Yeah.
Because the optic is so high and with the pistol grip, it just won't fit. So you can go out and spend your $20 in your case and it's not going to do, it won't fit all your firearms.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you also just brought up a good point. I remember when Sarah and I first started shooting and all we had were two cars and I originally bought the cheap Walmart and the shotgun case. So it was essentially designed to fit any shotgun, essentially a rifle with no scope, no pistol grip on it. And what we found out quickly is that we couldn't actually fit it inside the trunk of the car. We had to put it in the back seat because it was too long, and because it was rigid, you couldn't bend it. But then we realized when we bought the soft cases that when you put like the shotgun in there, the extra 6 inches of material that they give you, we could literally fold it back to make it fit inside the trunk.
You know what I did when we bought, because I had the same problem when we had the Shadow, like my big double case wouldn't fit in the trunk. So when I started looking at the Grand Prix, I brought the big double case with me to the gun dealership, and I said, okay, if it fits, I'll buy it. If it doesn't fit, and luckily the Grand Prix trunk, you could put it sideways and it fit perfect in there. I've done it a couple times. I go to buy a car, I bring the case. Hey, if the case fits, we're good to go. If it doesn't, not looking for something else.
Yeah.
Or you get a hatchback covered up.
Well, that's just it.
My next vehicle I want to get is a pickup truck, and I am totally getting a gun rack for it.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's actually a good point, because even with we have a crossover now, and I found this out the hard way when I went to go pack up the truck or car to go out to Manitoba, is you can't actually fit the rifle cases in there without folding both the middle and the back row seats down. It's actually just like 2 inches too long. You have to fold the front set of seat down, which that could be a pain if we actually had, you know, enough people traveling with us that we needed that seat. But yep. You also might want to look into how does it lock. Like you were talking before, do you get the cheap clamps that you get from the Walmart case, or do you get the good ones that, I don't know how you describe it, you kind of hook it on and they snap in?
So like a locking lock, when it goes down, it actually locks into place?
Yeah, something like that. A lot more secure. And actually on that subject, also built-in locks. Some cases have, you know, your old money briefcase with the combination lock on it, something like that, or they have built-in like key locks on it. I know mine does, but I don't like using key locks, so I just don't use them. But I'd love to find a nice... I'd love to find a good pistol case with some of those the spinny dial combinations on it. But yep, and
I don't think I have any cases like that. All my cases are none of them have built-in locks.
No, I think it's kind of.
I have pistol cases that do, but no long gun cases that do.
Yeah. Well, I think they make sense, because if you have to put a padlock onto it, if you have too big of a padlock, then they could literally unclamp things, and then you could open it up as far as that padlock will allow you. Right?
Odds are they're just going to take the case and walk away anyway. But that's the problem. Like a lot of these cases, you'll have a little tiny plastic little tab underneath the handle, and which qualifies as being locked under the Firearms Act. But if you open up the latches, you still have the two ends are such a thin, flexible plastic. You just lift up an end, pull out what you want, and close it. Hmm.
And that comes back to what kind of case you grab, right? The Walmart specials, yeah. The ones, the thicker plastic are a lot more rigid, so they don't allow that flexibility.
No.
But that is a good reminder that a gun case won't keep your gun safe from being stolen. Someone can literally just pick it up and walk away with it and, you know, open it up at their leisure somewhere else, or take a saw to it or whatever they want to do. It really can't be seen much as a deterrent for someone who has criminal intent, but someone who's an honest person, I don't know. If they're honest, they're probably not stealing anyways. So
the gun case is just to protect your firearm, and the level of protection is going to be based upon what you actually buy.
And a visual barrier, right? Passerby, if your gun case is left in the back of your car and someone walks by, they may not immediately recognize it as a gun case, depending on its shape, right? So
true,
it can also make it a bit of a, what do you want to call that? Like a visual barrier. It helped blend it in.
Well, the best thing to do is actually not make it visible at all. What I do is my HHR, I've got, because of the dog, I had this great big carpet in the back, a black carpet. So the inside of the truck's black, the carpet's black. And what I do, I just lift up the carpet and put everything underneath the carpet. So when we look in the black, all you see is the black. You don't see anything because you got tinted windows, inside a black vehicle on top of a black carpet. So you don't even I've gotten pulled over, the cops sit there and they put their flashlight in, but they can't see anything.
Yeah.
So the and now everybody knows.
Yes. oh shoot, yeah.
I'm sure we've all seen the guitar case gun cases. I think that would be something I'd like to do is get like a guitar case and then do the foam and set it up so that you could carry your pistols or your AR in it. Yeah. If I ever get my AR built.
You know, it's funny, we're at the charity shoot. We're at the charity shoot.
I'd beat Tim to that comment.
We're at the charity shoot a few years ago when Steve Lee was there. The only thing I had that would fit my AR was my guitar case. So Lee walks in. Hey, mate, what kind of guitar you brought? Oh, Steve, that only plays one note. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, I said, bang. He said, it's my AR case. But it's the only case I had that would fit the AR.
Hmm.
Oh, and it's awesome. Lockable. It's a hard case. It's got built-in padlocks on it. I can walk down the street. You're going to have no idea that I have a gun in that. The other thing that I do is that I would actually want, and I bought a cheap briefcase, and I just cut out all the insides, and I just lined it with foam at the top or the bottom, and it looks like a regular briefcase when I'm walking up to go to the range. It looks like I'm going to work, but it's actually a gun case.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the same thing for my my single actions. I had an old briefcase that I used to have for work, and I just threw an old blanket inside, and that's it. Put my pistols in it, and then Bob's your uncle, and away we go.
You can basically use anything as a case to protect your firearms. The only thing the Firearms Act specifies is that it cannot be opaque. It can't be transparent.
Yeah.
You can't have a clear case or something where they can physically see what's in it. It has to be – the light can't go through the case to be legal.
Which seems weird because – and I understand why in Canada we wouldn't have anything like that, but I've never even seen something like that in the U.S. Like, why would you want your case to be opaque? Because if it's opaque, theoretically, all you're going to see is foam, right? Because unless you don't have foam on one side of your gun.
Yeah, I know.
It's even crazy. If it's an opaque case, you still have foam in there. There's still a visual barrier.
The only thing I've ever seen that was opaque was a friend of mine bought the Kimber conversion kit for .22, which I think is made by Marvell. And it's a gun case, but it's clear. But it's just designed for the slide. It's not designed for the rest of the gun. I'm sure you can put your gun in there. Yeah. But like you said, it did have the foam so you couldn't see it.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to use that line from The Princess Bride. I don't think that word means what you think it means.
It's opaque. It can't be translucent.
Right. Opaque means you cannot see through it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I said. It can't be opaque.
I thought Mike was saying, why would you want it opaque so you could see through?
Oh, I may have used it in the opposite sense that it was meant.
It's okay. I had to Google it to make sure. I'm like, I don't think that word means what he thinks it means. I'm like, opaque means you cannot see through. I'm like, before I say anything, I better Google. Because it wouldn't be the first time I made an ass of myself. And it certainly would not be the last time.
Thanks for making another other point.
Oh, I would have let that go.
Anyways, yep. And also on the subject of security, I've started doing this, and I think it's a decent idea, is to tether any hard cases I have to a solid object in a hotel room with a metal cable whenever visiting somewhere. So like the charity shoot, we went to the hotel room and we brought our firearms into the hotel and then we left them there while we went for dinner. And I always had the thought of, what if I don't know why the cleaning lady's coming in at 7 o'clock at night, but cleaning lady comes in with malintent and picks up the case and walks away with it. And that'd pretty much be the end of it. So,
you know, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. So I actually
got a cable lock or something just to wrap around the frame of the bed or something. So somebody can't. And that, quickly take it off.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. It's actually mine is actually an old snowboard lock for when you get to the bottom of the hill and you can lock your snowboard up while you go into the chalet. Well, it's an all-steel cable. It's a combination lock, so I can run it through the case. And then, like you said, yeah, I run it through the frame of the bed or something like that. and it makes it so that you would need at least some sort of heavy duty, you know, wire cutters or bolt cutters in order to take that apart and walk away with it. It at least takes away the snatch and grab, right?
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah. Just a thought that I've had. Yep. So what kind of... Do you have any soft cases, Thomas?
The only soft cases I have that they are actually given to me... The only thing I don't like about soft cases, too, is they absorb moisture. It's not a good idea to store a firearm in the basement with a soft case because my friend John gave me a couple of soft cases. And man, do they stink of mold. I had actually throw them in the washing machine. They stunk so bad. And they hold any moisture. So if you're in the basement, the moisture is still going to get through that soft case and it will hit your firearm. Yeah. The hard plastic cases tend to be more of a moisture barrier than a soft case.
Yeah. But actually on that subject, if you get yourself a good watertight, like hard sided case, if it's raining when you're out in the field and you put your gun in the case, that moisture is now trapped inside the case. So you have to be aware of that, that if you put your gun inside your case when it's out raining, especially in a watertight one, it's not going to breathe, right? It won't dry out. It will. Yeah. You'll have to make sure you take it out.
I made the mistake when I must have been 12 or 13. And same thing. Because I had to encase my gun because the sun was going down. And it had been raining. I threw it in the case and I didn't pull the gun out for maybe 5 or 6 months later. And there was all kinds of rust marks in the barrel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's too bad. I'm sure that happens to a bunch of people, but just some more consideration to let things air dry a little. Yep. What about you, George? What do you carry your guns in?
I've got two soft cases and, generally, like when I do my cowboy shoot, I'll take my lever action, wrap it in a towel, and then put my double barrel in the case and then my lever action on top of it. And then I transport two in one case. Why is that funny?
I don't know. Buy another case.
I have a second case. Actually, I got the second case from Thomas when I bought the Marlin off of him.
Oh, that's right. I threw in a case, didn't I? It was a hard case I gave you?
No, it was soft.
Yeah, see, that's what I did with my soft case. I gave it away.
Yeah.
That one with all the mold on it?
His Princess Auto.
It doesn't smell. I actually washed that one. Actually, the one I gave him was probably a newer one.
No, I think it was brand new because it still had the tag on it. It was like a $15 Princess Auto case.
Oh, that was the camel case.
Yeah, the camel one, yeah.
Yeah, that one, I never actually used that. I had it for years. It's just hanging up.
It's actually still got the Marlin inside it.
Now, didn't the Marlin rust?
I don't think so.
Yeah. You said your Marlin.
It's got some surface rust on the barrel because when it, the maple seed, when it rained, it
poured.
It got the moisture.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I wonder what happened to that case. I was looking for it. I forgot I gave it to you.
Yeah.
What about for your pistols? Do you just have...
My cowboy action, I got the briefcase for my two single action. And then my buck mark and my... brain fart. What, the other one I got.
The M22?
Yes, thank you. They both came with their own case.
Okay. And the cases that they came with, you can fit a lock in them? Okay.
Yeah, they got the little, loophole thing.
Okay. See, I think most of the handguns that I bought, they don't have enough room on the inside to fit like a trigger lock or something inside of them to lock them up.
No, a lot of them can't. There's not enough room. You could one of those thin plastic locks, but
Yep. I was just gonna say that's what's on them.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Just the cheap little where it's got the two holes and on the screw and the screws in.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. See, that would be kind of nice because, yeah, I have a stack of pistol cases that they come with and they're all garbage because I can't fit a lock inside because we need to double lock them.
You can put the lock on it, but then you try to close it and the lock's wider than the gun.
Yeah, but then the second lock doesn't work.
Yeah. You have to squish down on it.
Yeah.
I've got a couple. I've got a briefcase style. Like, I've got an actual briefcase that I don't use anymore because I actually went out and got a nice aluminum case, but it only holds two pistols. So then I was down in Florida a couple of years ago, and I'm trying to remember the name of this, I think Dick's Sporting Goods. They had one of those MTM case guard. This thing will hold like six handguns. And it's really thick. It's got multiple layers of sponge. They're clearing them out for $9.99. So I grabbed
one. Oh, nice.
Actually, I grabbed two and brought one back from my neighbor.
You didn't get me one?
I didn't know you at the time.
That's no excuse.
Excuse of excuses.
You actually had stopped recording the podcast at the time, so yeah.
Well, so you did know me.
Maybe.
Or you knew of me.
He didn't want to admit that he knew you, though.
You know, I get that far more often than I probably should, but...
Yeah, I know Sarah and I, we've been looking into it. We want to find a nice case that will hold at least four handguns, because we've had it lots of times where we'll go to a competition and I'll bring a gun and I'll bring it back up, and Sarah will bring a gun and she'll bring it back up, and we'll just have like a stack of like four pistol cases in the car.
Yeah, that's why I switched to the bigger. If I'm only taking one or two guns, I'll just bring the small case. But especially if I'm taking a new person shooting, I'll bring three or four different 22s, and I like to shoot my center fire. So, and you know, the less cases you have to carry, the better.
Yeah. And actually, when I've taken people to the range for the first time, and I do the same thing, I bring pretty much everything out of the safe, I'll actually put them into a rifle case.
Cause yeah, I can
line up like six or eight of them in a rifle case where they can only fit two in a pistol.
I tried to hide them actually when I'm leaving the house. Like if I'm going out, the big case will actually fit in one of my knapsacks.
Oh, really?
So that way, you know, nobody knows. Well, my neighbor across the street will know because he knows I'm a shooter. But when I walk in the house, a lot of times, unless it's a long gun, you don't know what I have with me. It'll either be in the briefcase or it'll be in my knapsack. So if I'm walking to and from the range or to and from my car, you can't physically see what I have, or you can't identify that I have a gun with me.
Yeah.
I might get a bunch of hate mail, but if I'm going like with Wanda and the kids, as they're walking out the door, I'll just hand them rifles, no cases, no nothing, and out goes the parade of guns out of the apartment building, no cases or anything. The pistols are obviously in cases because they have to be for transportation, but the long guns don't need to be cased, so out everyone's out walking with guns, and there were just a parade of guns going out to the car.
Yeah, I've had that too, when you're bringing more guns than you have cases for, kind of thing. But
yeah, I've had to do wrap a blanket around it, sneak outside the door because you don't have enough cases left over.
No, I don't bother with that. Every hunting season, you can just drive down the road and be like, he had the gun. Like, he hadn't gotten a gun yet, he had a gun. Like, everyone in my neighborhood had one, so to see a rifle case is no big deal.
We still see a lot of guys up here with the gun racks in the back of their pickup trucks.
Oh, yeah?
I've seen them getting pulled over a couple times, but the only stipulation is that once you leave the vehicle, it has to be out of sight.
That's why you get those like retractable blinds. So you just pull your blind down on either side and Bob's around. It's covered.
Well, you can get gun racks actually go behind your seat.
Yeah. You also need to have a trigger lock on if you leave the car, too.
It has to be trigger locked.
Whereas it doesn't need to be trigger locked while you're still in the car.
Yeah, mine have always got trigger locks on them, even if I'm transporting them. They've got to be stored with trigger locks, so why bother transporting without one?
Even though you don't require it, the problem is a lot of times law enforcement don't know the laws. And if they don't see a trigger lock on it, they may lay a charge anyway, even though it's not required. So it's always better just to put a lock on it and not have to worry about it.
Yeah. Also, though, what if you jump in the car and you start driving and you realize, you know, I need gas.
Yeah.
Right? And you have to go to the gas station. You know, you're not going to make it to the range and back. Well, now you're out of your car. You need to be locked up. It just doesn't make sense.
Or how easy is it to pull into a Timmy's, go, oh, forget this, I'm not waiting in that drive-through line, I'll just run in real quick,
Yeah.
Your mind's distracted. You're focused on something else. You forget the pistol or the pistol. Pistol better be cased. You forget the rifle. You forget the rifle sitting there with no trigger lock on it. You run in, boom, now you're a criminal, right?
Yeah. Well, I made that mistake when we went to Furlots. I figured, okay, well, I don't need a trigger lock. I'm just transporting. And then I got out to near Campbellton and I realized, oh, I'm going to be storing these in his living room. So that's going to be not transporting. That's going to be storage. I actually had to go out and buy some trigger locks on the way out there because I didn't bring any with me for the long guns.
And I got chastised once because I uncased my my rifle and I had a trigger lock on it. And the guy's like, why do you have a trigger lock? You're transporting. I'm like, because before I was transporting, it was called storage, and you need a trigger lock. And I'm not taking my trigger lock off just so I can drive with a gun that's not trigger locked. And I actually got chastised once for it. I'm like, never. Yeah. Like,
he's an idiot, you know. Then.
Yeah. The other thing, too, also to consider, worst case scenario, is what if you're in an accident on your way there, right? What if you just get rear-ended and your trunk won't close?
You know what?
And your gun just, or your even worse, your gun just goes flying across the road and there's no trigger lock on it.
Well, not only that, but this happened to a coworker of mine. He got rear-ended and he had to get transported to the hospital. So he had to call another coworker that had his pal to come and get his guns out of the car before the police would release the car. So if they were not trigger locked, how would that work? Because
they're no longer get a ticket.
Transported, right? Like
yeah.
It would cause too much gray. You know what? When you're pulling them out of your house, they're already trigger locked, or they damn well better be because that's the law. Why, unless you're hunting? If you're hunting, I can understand driving around with a firearm with no trigger lock on it, because if you're going from, you know, this hunting area to that hunting area and you're going to go check out this hunting area, that makes sense. You're not going to put a trigger lock on. That's just kind of silly. Yeah. But if you're going to the range.
Yeah.
I guess if it's in a safe, it doesn't need to be trigger locked. So I could maybe see that.
Well, that's just it, right? A lot of our guns don't have trigger locks because they're all inside a safe right now.
See,
right?
Yeah, see, mine...
Because I have more guns than I have trigger locks, so I run into a situation where I take all my trigger locks off when they go into the safe,
I got more guns than I have space in my safe. Well,
That's actually... Sarah and I were literally talking about that this week, and we're saying, geez, we need to find somewhere to fit another safe, because as we build our... Literally, we have we have like four or five handguns piled on top of each other right now. Because we've run out of space in our safe, and we have two ARs that are about to be built. Least one. Mine might hang around for a while, but at least one that's like pretty much ready to be built, and it's going to need somewhere to live.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat. Like, I've got my pistols are just stacked up on each other in my living room. Now they're trigger locked, and they're in cases that are locked, so they're legal. But
You have to remember too that a lot of law enforcement think that all firearms have to be trigger locked during transport. Where legally it's only the non-restricted have to be double locked during transport, not a non-restricted. And I know
restricted need to be double locked.
They need to be double locked, but non-restricted do not. And I actually know two guys that my gunsmith was telling about when the Remington first came out with the 597, it had an internal trigger lock. So they locked up with the internal trigger lock. Well, they got charged and they ended up losing the gun. So they went to court. It got thrown out because first of all, trigger lock wasn't required during transport. And second of all, it had an internal trigger lock. I also mentioned, I actually contacted the firearm center a couple of years ago and I asked them if an internal trigger lock on a restricted firearm qualified, because both Terry and myself have 22.45s that have internal trigger locks in the gun. It's like just basically an Allen key, but it locks the trigger. And the firearm center said, yes, internal trigger locks do qualify as being trigger locks. But the OPP told Williams Arms that they would charge anybody who took a gun out of a store that didn't have an external trigger lock. So you have the people that manage the laws say one thing, and the people that enforce the laws say the other thing. So just to cover your butt, put a trigger lock on it when you take it to and from the range or to and from hunting, because if something does happen, like we said, you have an accident or you get pulled over and the law enforcement is not familiar with the laws, you're covered. You're not going to get charged. You're not going to lose your guns.
Yeah. And for what, the $5, $10 that it costs for a trigger lock? I mean, just go buy one. And actually, most guns, if you buy a new gun, it'll come with one of those cable locks. And they're a pain in the butt because every one comes with a new key. So it's another key you would have to keep on you if you want to use it. But there's really no excuse why you don't have at least some sort of locking device on it.
I keep, you know, those plastic tie-down clamps? I usually keep a half a dozen of those in my bag.
Yeah, because that's how a lot of times manufacturers will ship a gun.
That's how the police store them.
With really? Like, can you, like, a zip tie?
Yep.
Yeah, like a zip tie. You can either zip tie the trigger back so you can't work it, or, like, run it through the action, or...
It was funny. There was the gun show out in Alberta a couple of years ago. The RCMP were telling people that they would charge any of the exhibitors that didn't have an external trigger lock. And even though the police use the zip ties, and the guy, you know, organizers and all the vendors said, no, we don't have to. He goes, this is what the law says. This is what you guys use. This is what we're going to use. And even though they threatened to charge people, they never did. They came in and they didn't lay any charges. But they threatened the people saying, if you don't use this type of trigger lock, you will get charged. And the law just says it has to be what? Mechanical, electronic, mechanical. There was a third thing that it stops the trigger from functioning. It doesn't specify that it has to be a metal lock with a key or a cable lock. It just says a secure locking device. And if the police can use them, why can't we use them?
Yeah. The pain in the butt thing with the zip tie method, though, is when you tie it down, it's right against your gun. Well, how do you cut that off
without accidentally
marring your gun?
Very carefully.
With a laser beam.
Yeah. Well, that's just – well, yeah, you do it with a laser beam, you'll go right through the zip tie and you'll burn your gun. Yeah, come on, George. Think it through.
But if you got a laser beam, that's bad.
If you have a laser beam, then what are you doing with your gun?
Exactly.
You have seen George shoot, haven't you?
Yeah, the laser beam wouldn't help.
But you should have seen him roll his eyes on the video.
So how did we get from cases to locks?
Freaking lasers.
Freaking laser beams. I want sharks with freaking laser beams on their head.
I don't know, George. Why don't you bring it back?
I still don't know why you guys let me on this show.
Because, see, you're clearly keeping the show in line.
Oh, clearly. So, events. Let's go to events. Thomas, what is event number one?
Event number one is March 11th. It's the AR-15 Basics course by Runerick Tactical. I think I got it that time. Saturday, March 11th, between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m., tickets are available. The link is in the show notes. And I believe the course, what was it, $176.99 plus theft. So it's a good deal. So if you're just new to an AR and you want to learn the platform, especially how to compete with the platform or learn how to maintain it or look after it, it'd be a great course to check out.
Yep. Event number two is the Carbine Operator course. On July 7th, this is the day before the charity shoot, and it is $176.99 plus theft, and that's also being put on by Ragnarok Tactical.
That's how Ragnarok. We have to ask Andrew, because I think Andrew actually does the training for Ragnarok Tactical.
Yeah, I believe he does. And actually, on this subject, I was on my gun wish list. One of them was a P229 tactical pack, and it came with like a flashlight and a tactical holster, and they don't make them anymore, and the last one just sold out here in Canada, so unfortunately I missed it. So I kind of was sitting there going, man, what gun is on my gun wish list now? And I kind of don't really have anything, so I kind of decided that last year was the year of buying guns. I bought technically 4 guns. This is going to be my year of courses, so I'm hoping to get out there and do as much training as I can. So I'm hoping this will be on my list, my short list of places or courses to take.
Okay, this might be a dumb question, but you said it's $176.99 plus theft. What the heck does that mean, plus theft?
Taxation is theft.
Oh, gotcha. I was like, theft? What the hell is that? All right, well, you know, welcome to the show, George. Event number three. That would be you, Thomas.
Oh, me?
That, yep. Your name's all over it.
July 8th, the 7th Annual Canadian Podcaster Charity Shoot fundraising event. And the host this year is Canadian Patriot Podcast and the International Liberty Death Podcast are actually co-hosting the event, I believe. Saturday, July 8th, between 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. at the Guelph Rod End Gun Club. We have a Facebook link if you want to go on, get involved in the page, go in and visit it. Oh, and it's at the Guelph Rod and Gun Club. I believe it's the same club for all the events, isn't it?
I don't know because the Carmine Operator course is just at Kitchener. So it might be Guelph, it might not be.
You know what? It might not be. That might be at a different range. But the Carmine Operator course and the charity shoot will be at the Guelph Rod and Gun Club. So they're probably going to be very limited to what we probably did the very first charity shoot. You're probably going to have your pistol shoot in the morning portion, and then the afternoon, you have to make your way over the rifle range for the rifle portion. I'm not sure yet. I haven't seen it, but I've just got the guys picked it up. It looks like they've got a lot of sponsors, and they've been working pretty hard at it. George, what's event four? This is right up your line.
Event number four is the Manitoba Mounted Shooting Association is having a beginner/intermediate mounted shooting clinic. So all you folks out in the Manitoba area that are interested in trying mounted shooting, it is at, why do they do these weird names?
Chalanchuk Acres.
There you go. It is, what is with these addresses? 103 West and 48th Road North, Nesbitt, Manitoba.
Because when you get out to Manitoba, they just kind of said, screw it, we're not going to bother naming them. So they just did them by mile markers.
All right. So 103 West and 48th Road North in Nesbitt, Manitoba. This is going to be on April 22nd, 2017. It's going from 10 till 4. The cost is $120. There is a limit of 10 people. This clinic includes a free one-year membership for first-time MMSA members, which would be your Manitoba Mounted Shooting Association membership. So if you're interested in it, I would definitely give them a shout. And we'll have the link for the Manitoba Mounted Shooting Association in the show notes.
Unfortunately, when I went to the website, I couldn't find any information on this. But it does say right in the flyer, if you're interested in it, please contact Angie at 204-298-7533 or email at Manitoba Mounted Shooters, that's plural, at gmail.com. And your payment is required at time of booking.
Excellent. Thank you, Mike, for actually reading the whole thing.
No problem. I know it at the end, so I knew you didn't make it.
Zing! All right, so next is, now this one was given to me because apparently I must be the redneck of the group. I'm not sure about that, but, you know, who's to argue? It's the BC Three-Gun Redneck Championship. It is going to run you $100 if you sign up before June 15th, $125 after June 15th, and
the date of July 8th and 9th.
It's a picture, so I'm trying to scroll around. July 8th and 9th?
We even blew it up really big so you could even see it.
I know, but I still got to blow it up even bigger. Okay, so you register at... Okay, we're just going to put that link in the show notes because it's a great big long link. Let's see, what else is there?
Apparently there's plenty of RV parking and the Lone Butte Fire Department will be cooking breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Three-gun rules, 10 stages, over 400 rounds. I should actually look at this picture and just read off the picture. Rifle targets out to 200 yards. Man-on-man single knockout shoot-off on Sunday after main match. The awards trophies will be winner match, second overall, third overall. In each division, if 10 or more entries. So contact information is Brian McCoy, Phone number 604-793-8053 or Brian Williams 250-706-3417 and tell them New Shooter Canada sent you.
And actually, when they tell say, there's no discount if you do.
No, tell them Crystal Power suggested it. You'd probably get their results that way.
It actually says here, if you register before May 1st, it enters you into a free night at the Match Motel. So if you need somewhere to stay, you enter before May 1st, might even win your night stay.
Cool.
Yeah, that's a... You win your night stay. I mean, that's you're only paying $100 for your match. That's a pretty good deal.
There you go. And that's the BC Three Gun Redneck Championship. Yeehaw! All right, listener email. Do you guys want me to take this?
Yes, please.
Since I apparently failed at reading last week, yeah, please.
All right. Good day. I just heard your, and this is in quotes, reading of my email. And the response, thank you. You're very welcome. I'm a contemporary of Thomas's, but I got an earlier start than most. For instance, the first distinct memory I have of reloading is loading 243 ammo in the basement of our house on CFB Penhold for a coyote shoot in 1969. Where's CFB Penhold?
No idea. I'll look it up while you read.
All right. I was 6 and obviously under supervision. Well, 1969, I don't know, you may not have been. That was the days of no car seats and no seat belts. I still have the powder and dyes I used then. Yep, I still have a little bit left of the 50-pound keg of H4831 that my father bought in 1963. That's pretty cool. Actually, that's actually kind of cool. I was also really lucky with some of the guys I interacted with. I bought a Swedish Mauser from Mr. Alan Lever. Is that Lever or Lever?
That's Lever.
Lever? Lever.
Yeah, Lever Guns.
Lever. When when they were stacked like cordwood on the floor of his store in downtown Vancouver. When I bought 6... He threw in the case, which was handy because my buddy and I had to take them on the bus down to the ferry of Nanaimo. Alan Lever was a freaking legend. I'm going to stop here for a sec. And this is kind of cool because my dad shares a similar memory with me walking through downtown Stratford with his 22 just over his shoulder, and if cops were driving by, where's the bolt? He'd pull it out of his pocket very well, and he'd just keep on walking right through downtown Stratford with a rifle. So apparently Nanaimo or whatever it is was
Nanaimo. Similar.
Yeah. They make good bars.
Lever.
And while you're taking a break, CFB Penhold was in Alberta, and it's now a defunct base.
Oh, that's sad. All right, continuing on. I was also really lucky with some of the guys I interact... Oh, I read that already. Next paragraph.
Blatter, when you send your next email, we'll let Thomas read it. We'll give him a shot.
I also knew guys that hunted, and he's got big capital letters, legally with handguns in Canada. Alberta and Ontario specifically. Yep, it really was legal for anyone with a hunting license. Not many guys did it. There weren't really many handguns that were any better than a bow. For instance, the guys I remember both used Browning High Powers, one in 9mm and one in 30 Luger, which basically meant stocking to 40-ish yards max. Back to the Swedes. That's what I like to hear. That was George's commentary, that part. At the time, early 70s, 6.5x55 was really scarce, and the only reliable source was Norma at about $30 per box, which was about a day's wage, so I started reloading it. No kidding. Wow. Then I got an AG-42B Jungman.
Don't ask me how to pronounce that.
I'm not Swedish.
Now would be silent.
Jungman. If you ever shot one of these, you'll know how hard they fling the empties. So I looked through my dad's loading manuals and figured I could make Swede cases out of 30-06 or 270 cases, which I had a bunch of, and it worked. I've got some stories, bros. Splatter. You know, Splatter, we should probably have you on the show now that I'm thinking of it. That would be awesome to get some good old war stories from back in the day. We'd ask Thomas, but he's gone senile and can't remember anything past yesterday.
You just want to hear about his monsters, that's all.
Yes. I've shot Kevin's got a Mauser, and I've shot it. Loved it. I love all that surplus stuff. Absolutely love it. So, anyway, Splatter, I apologize for brutalizing your email, and if you ever do decide to write us in again, which I don't blame you if you don't, because apparently 66% of us can't read your emails.
We're 0 for 2 out of now.
We'll get Thomas to read it. And if I haven't scared anybody else off from contributing to the show, please send any feedback, questions, or comments that you may have to host@newshootercanada.ca, our Facebook page, or in the comment section of our website at newshootercanada.ca. So that brings us to iTunes and Stitcher, and we have none as of now. Facebook looks. Oh my goodness.
Facebook looks. Wow.
Facebook likes. This is what happens when you take 2 weeks off the show. Can't read, can't talk, can't do nothing. Facebook likes. 10:22 as of now, which I was informed is Thomas's favorite number.
It is.
So whoever is the 1,022nd person that liked our show, Thomas is eternally grateful and will buy you a new car. Maybe not.
All right. So, you know what my membership number is at the club?
357?
No, 1023. They gave Terry 1022. I begged them, come on, switch numbers. Let me get 1022. No, they wouldn't. Terry's 1022.
I was going to say one because you're
that. Yeah, I know, because he founded the whole thing. He was there when Canada signed off to become a country.
Actually, technically,
you can actually see him in the background of the photo.
Actually, I believe John Williams Arms was one of the ones that founded the club.
All right, closing comments. Thomas, is this your quote?
Yeah, I remember a couple of months ago I was putting in Jeff Cooper quotes. Well, I found one today that I thought, I'll just read it. If someone has a gun that's trying to kill you, it would be reasonable to shoot back with your own gun. The quote comes from Dalai Lama, this was quoted out of the Seattle Times back in 2001. So even, a man renowned for his vision of peace still says it's reasonable for a person to protect their own lives. So I thought it was a good quote.
I don't know much about the Dalai Lama what religion is he? Buddhist? It's a Dalai Lama. I think he's Buddhist. But there's a difference between peace and pacifism. You can still be peaceful and defend yourself. So I don't know what the Dalai Lama was.
He's very well respected by most religions because he a lot of stuff he says is just common sense.
Yeah. I think he's kind of like the Pope of the Buddhists.
He's in exile. Yeah. I think he's in exile because of the Chinese.
He's
from Tibet.
The Dalai Lama is Buddhist, and he's the leader of the Tibetan Buddhism.
He's from Tibet.
Yeah.
So he's in exile. He doesn't live in his home country because it's in communist rule now.
Right. And Dalai Lama is a title, not a person.
Yeah. Kind of like becoming the Pope, right? Well, I guess you pick your own name when you're a Pope. But yeah, when you become the Dalai Lama, you take his name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. All right.
Yep.
Very reasonable quote.
Yeah.
Who was it? I think Gandhi. I think Gandhi has said similar things too about in support of self-defense. So, all right, shout outs. So I want to give a shout out to my buddy Terry out in Saskatchewan. And he took his PAL course this weekend and passed. So now he's just got to wait 12 months for it to finally show up in the mail and he can go buy a gun.
Congratulations.
Actually, Terry,
is our PAL or is just his regular?
Just his regular PAL. I think, what is it, 45-day waiting period? And then you got to wait like 2 months for them to process it.
They don't even look at it.
45 or 60.
Yeah, they don't even look at it for 30 days.
Is it 30 days or 45? I thought it was
45. I thought it was more like 45 or 60.
No, I think it's 30 days. But they don't even look at it. It stays in a pile for 30 days before they even look at it.
Maybe it just feels like 60 days.
But by the time it actually gets processed, it's more like 90 days.
Yeah.
So Terry will, and he's already been messaging me, asking me questions about first guns and that sort of thing. So I'm very excited for him, very stoked. Actually, he was supposed to go, I was supposed to take him out shooting back in September. And I was sitting at Strathroy Hospital waiting to see my ear, nose, and throat doctor and end up missing our range date. So he was very understanding about that. So I apologize, Terry. But now he's got his PAL, so he can get his own gun and go shooting on his own.
Good.
And Thomas.
I forgot one item. Mike Dunhoven from CSA actually messaged me because I asked him what he liked at the SHOT Show. And he said most of it was pretty tame. There was no real guns that really caught his eye. But apparently there was a Raven R9 crossbow that was really, really nicely liked, but it was mega, mega buck. So, Mike, thanks for answering me back. Sorry, he just answered me now, so I couldn't put it in the other spot, but I wanted to acknowledge that he actually did contact me. So, see, people from the CSA do actually talk to me sometimes.
I have no idea why. I don't know why.
But I did message Tony Bernardo, but he never did answer. But
he's a busy man, I'm sure.
Well, I only asked him today, so he might not even be home. So.
All right, Mike.
My shout out goes to Andrew. He's one of the club members when we were discussing back and forth about a new shooter course, and it turned into the Wednesday night practice night. He kind of also got roped in to help me out putting on the practice night. So. Thank you for being a good sport about it, and hopefully we'll put on a lot of good practice courses.
Excellent. All right. Well, that concludes episode 120. So if you're still listening, I apologize for derailing the show many a times, but you know what? That's what I do. So really, what else do you expect? So until next time, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
Take your kid shooting.
Time spent at the range, it's time spent with family. Goodbye, everyone.
Hey, catch you all next week.
Have a good night, everybody.
Well, I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale, hell, I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
Babe?
Yes, dear.
I'm at like 7 seconds, 8, 9.
Okay. As long as we're relatively close, I can always nip a little off the top.
That's what the rabbi said. All right. I'm ready to go whenever you guys are.
Yeah, we're ready to go.
Well, let me pull up the show notes after I just finished saying how ready I was. Okay. I love the idea of selling military, especially Canadian military surplus to the public. I love the idea. It just seems like, and there goes Wanda's son's hockey equipment down the stairs.
I was going to say, is someone walking across the room in high heels? Or?
No, that's no, that was Wanda's George. Son. Wanda's son just got back from hockey.
You add content. Anything with worthwhile content, but you add content.